Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 13, text 27. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King Parikshit, all the kings of the dynasty of Mithila were completely in knowledge of their spiritual identity. Therefore, even though staying at home, they were liberated from the duality of material existence." Purport. This material world is called dvaita, or duality. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, Antilila 4:176, dvaite badra badra jnana sabha manodharma e bhala e manda e sabha dharma. In the world of duality, that is to say, in the material world, the so-called goodness and badness are both the same. Therefore, in this world, to distinguish between good and bad, happiness and distress, is meaningless, because they are both mental concoctions, manodharma. Because everything here is miserable and troublesome, to create an artificial situation and to pretend to be full of happiness is simply illusion. The liberated person, being above the influence of the three modes of material nature, is unaffected by such dualities in all circumstances. He remains Krishna conscious by tolerating so-called happiness and distress, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Matra sparshasta kunteya shitoshna shukadukada agama payano nityas tam satikshashvabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O son of Bharat, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Those who are liberated, being on the transcendental platform of rendering service to the Lord, do not care about so-called happiness and distress. They know that they are like the changing seasons, which are perceivable by contact with the material body. Happiness and distress come and go. Therefore, a pundit, a learned man, is not concerned with them, as it is said, Gatasams, Agatashamscha, Nanusho Chanti Panditaha. The body is dead from the very beginning because it is a lump of matter. It has no feelings of happiness and distress. As the soul within the body is in the bodily concept of life, he suffers happiness and distress. But these come and go. It is understood herewith that the kings born in the dynasty of Mithila were all liberated persons, unaffected by the so-called happiness and distress of the world. Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King Parikshit, all the kings of the dynasty of Mithila were completely in knowledge of their spiritual identity. Even though staying at home, they were liberated from the duality of material existence." Om Anjana Timurandasya Nanjana Shalakai Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Atma Vidya Visharada. These, they were kings, they were grihasthas, but they had Atma Vidya Visharada. They were expert in knowledge of the self. Although they were surrounded by so many opulences, so many varieties of pleasure and enjoyment, they were fixed in the idea that Aham Brahmasmi, I am a soul, I am a spirit soul. But unfortunately, the majority of the people in the world, and ourselves also, we become influenced by dvandva. Te dvandva mohanir mukta. This illusion, this moha of duality. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was teaching to Sanatana Goswami, Prabhupada quotes that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the purport. He said, this whole material world, whether you see happiness or distress, it is all this, even this concept, this idea of duality is also illusion. Because Sanatana Goswami, the pastime supporting this philosophy, there's Leela and there's Tattva. There's Tattva Vichara and Leela Vichara. So they're interwoven in the pastimes in Bhagavatam, Leela Tattva, and Shastra, or you can say Tattva Vichara, the truth of the self, or the substance, reality, and Leela Tattva. So this pastime is that Sanatana Goswami, he passed through the Jarikan forest and he got infected by some kind of disease, skin disease. And he had all kinds of sores on his body. And they were oozing all kinds of pus and blood and abominable substances. So when he came to Puri, he was thinking that my body is abominable. I should throw my body under the wheel of the Jagannath cart and give up my body in suicide. Because otherwise, Lord Chaitanya, when he sees me, because his loving nature is to embrace all of his devotees, he will greet me with a warm embrace. Swagatam, swagatam. Welcome, welcome. And then, when the Lord, his beautiful spiritual body, contacts my body, which is all defiled with all these poisonous substances from my skin disease, then his body will be all sullied and dirtied from those pus and blood of my wounds and sores. So I don't want to make this offense. So when he went to Lord Chaitanya, he was keeping some distance, and Lord Chaitanya says, yes, I know your mind. There is some duality in your mind. But I accept your body as nectar. Your body is amrit. It is not vish. It is not poison. There are no poisonous substances on your body. Your body is transcendental nectar. Besides, your body belongs to me. And you think that you can commit by committing suicide, by throwing your body in front of the Jagannath cart and giving up your body, that you can attain love of God? Do you think you can attain love of God by committing suicide? If that were true, then I would commit suicide a million times. If I could attain love of God by committing suicide, then let me kill myself a million times, if it takes that many suicides to attain love of God. But no, you'll never attain love of God by this means. So then he spoke this verse, Manodharma. He said, this is Manodharma, you're making distinctions. Because Dharma, the word Dharma in one sense it means religion, but Dharma also means the essential quality of something. The Dharma of something, the essential quality is the Dharma. So to the Manodharma means that you're with your mind, you're making distinctions, you're seeing duality. And Vishwanath Chakravartipad, he explains that when we see the variegatedness of this world, when we see all the abilities and the skills and the opulences and all the varieties in this world, when we filter those things through our mind, then we see that these transformations, we see different transformations of the material energy. And this is called, when you see the opulences of the Lord as being in so many different compartments and so many differences, it's called manovikar, vikara. Vikara means transformation. Manovikara means transformation of the mind. Your mind has become transformed because of false ego. When false ego influences, in other words, what is false ego? False ego is a conception. False ego is a concept is when the mind combines with the illusory conception and this material world is real. That's false ego. Because what is ego? Ego is a sense of identity. We say hankara. There's hankara and ahankara. So the sense of identity or what I am is ego. But when the mind, when we think, when our consciousness, which is the energy or the identity of the soul, when we think that I am this, I am matter, or I am this material body, or I am a product of this material world, or I am produced from this material world, then when that thinking, that mano, when that mind combines with that conception, that produces an identity, a false identity. It's called ahankar. Ahankar means the false identity. Because when the mind thinks I am produced, I am this body, I am produced in this world, then we think I am man, I am woman. So this Vishwanath explains that manovikar means to see all the dualities, all the differences of this world, and see that they're all, everything in this world is all different, and there's so many varieties. And then when the mind, when our mind is transformed in a favorable way, when we're feeling friendly and favorable towards the different dualities of the material world, then we make distinctions like this. We say, this is my father, this is my wife, this is my husband, this is my child, my son, my daughter, this is my country. Because the mind is positioned in a favorable way, yes. But then the mind can, under this vikar, this transformation, a little while later the mind can change its position, then we think, oh, this person is my enemy. So then when our mind becomes situated in an inimical or unfavorable position, then we think, oh, this person is my enemy, he must be eliminated, or this person is unfavorable to me. It's just actually all this pleasure and pain, all this happiness and distress of this jaya pratisarati ki jai ho. The happiness and distress in this world and all these dualities, it is all a product of false ego. Of course, the soul in the body, it experiences, we feel the happiness and distress. But happiness and distress is actually happening, it's existing on the platform of the false ego. Because there is no happiness and distress in the material body. This body, there is no happiness and distress in this body. Prabhupada explains that in the purport. This body is dull matter. The happiness, and the reason I didn't leave the kirtan is I have, my voice is practically shut. The happiness and distress that we are experiencing is on the platform of false ego. All of this happiness and distress we experience is on the platform of false ego, identifying with the material body. But the real ego means, what is real ego? It means when I identify aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. I am spirit soul. There is no duality. Everything that exists in this world is part and parcel, is the energy of Krishna. It is all one. It is all the energy of Krishna. And my so-called, I say this is my husband, my wife, my body, all of these things, all these persons we see there, and all these elements and all these energies and these skills and abilities and all these things we see are simply part and parcel of Krishna. But under the influence of false ego, then we see the duality. False ego makes us see duality. And then when you exist on the platform of duality, then what is duality? Duality means shitoshna shukadukada. There's happiness and distress, warm and cold, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, honor and dishonor. This is all going on the platform of false ego. The whole material existence is based on the false ego. So these kings, they had atma tattva. They had this atma gyan. They understood, I am not this body. And when you realize we're not the body, then you exist, I am the living consciousness. I am the living consciousness within this body. And the living consciousness, the soul doesn't experience any happiness, it doesn't experience any distress. There is no happiness or distress for the soul. That is only a bodily phenomenon. So when one comes to the spiritual platform of the soul, then what does he realize? When living consciousness realizes, I am part and parcel of the Supreme Consciousness. I am consciousness. I am a spirit soul. And there's a Supreme Spirit Soul. The Supreme Personality of God, the omniscient, all-pervading Supreme Controller, God. And then when I render service, if I render service to him, then I experience my real identity. What is my real identity? Satchidananda. Satchitananda, bliss. There's no duality. It's unlimited eternal bliss. This is the real thing that we're meant to live on this platform. But the mind is always flickering. Chanchala mana, the mind is very flickering. So sometimes we're thinking I'm a spirit soul. When we're thinking that, then we're correctly situated in our true ego. We're correctly situated. But Lord Chaitanya has explained this manodharma. This manodharma means that the mind is moving. Sometimes I'm thinking I'm a spirit soul and I'm acting as a spirit soul, engaged in the service of Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna, worshipping Krishna. But because we're attached, the soul is still attached to this body, we're not liberated. These kings are liberated. Prabhupada says they were liberated. They were liberated by virtue of their atma-gyan. Because they were so much fixed in this knowledge, they were unswavering in the idea that they were definitely convinced that I'm not the body. So therefore, the call for knowledge is also here in this verse. One must attain knowledge to be fixed in the conception, to be fixed in the right conception that I am a spirit soul requires a constant input of knowledge. And when one is liberated, when one comes to the liberated platform, then you don't become unliberated. When you come to the liberated platform, then you stay there eternally. But until we come to that platform, we must be constantly injecting knowledge, transcendental knowledge, and acting on that platform. So Prabhupada explains that how does a devotee has to practice himself to train his vision to always be thinking and seeing, thinking how is everything related to Krishna? How is everyone part and parcel of Krishna? This is not my wife. This is Krishna Dasi. This is not my husband. This is Krishna Das. He belongs to Krishna. She belongs to Krishna. We are all Krishna's servants. And everyone here is Krishna's servant. And all this energy is not my energy, it's his energy. It's Krishna's energy. And everything that's in my hand is not mine, it's his. It's not my shirt, and my sweater, and my car, it's Krishna's. So when we come to this platform of knowledge, we realize everything belongs to him, then we have to start thinking, well, since it's his, how can I use everything for his pleasure? Somehow I have a car in my hand, I'm controlling a car, but it's not my car, it's Krishna's. How can I use it for him? A car isn't simply an extension of the body. It's another kind of body. Just like this body is dull matter. Your car is dull matter. It's just air and earth and all these things. So this body is just, what is it? Carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur? That's all it is. But the soul is moving this body. So this body, it belongs to Krishna, so we move it for Krishna's service. But we have so much problem because of this false ego. And if you want to know whether you have false ego, you can test very easily. If you ever say the word but, the proof of the false ego manifests itself in one of these activities. There's four things which materialistic people do. Ahara, nidra, maitun, bhayam. Bhayam means defending. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So someone might say, well, I'm only eating Krishna prasadam, so I'm controlling my eating and mating. I'm a celibate person. I'm not mating, or if I have children, as grihastha. So I'm controlling this eating, and I'm controlling this mating, and sleeping, I'm only sleeping for Krishna's service, so I'm controlling my service, my sleeping. So eating, sleeping, and mating are controlled, because these are the basic material activities of every conditioned soul who's controlled by false ego. Every conditioned, unliberated soul is engaged in eating, sleeping, and mating. Then the other principle is defending, bhayam. I don't have any fear, or I'm not fighting anyone. But actually, bhayam means false ego. Bhayam means defending your position. Practically every jiva is defending his position. He's always the false ego is always creating situations by which the soul can increase his false identification with this world. So the false ego is always supporting the misconception that I am perfect. I am the controller. I am the doer. I am faultless. I don't make any mistakes. So then, when you can find how this false ego asserts itself, by when you're defending these misconceptions, the misconceptions of Ishvaraham Aham Bhogi Siddham Balaban Sukhi. This is the Asura Sambad. This is the demoniac idea, demoniac mentality, that I am perfect. Ishvaraham, I am the controller. Aham Bhogi, I am the enjoyer, I am perfect. So these are the misconceptions. And then the false ego supports these or defends these. So now, you want to test your false ego. When you go, you do something in the world and then someone checks you, then you say, but. For example, the guru asks the disciple, he says, Ram Nam, please, I want you to go downtown, I want you to meet this person and do this and that, and ask him this and that and come back. So then he's given this order by guru. And then he goes and tries to execute it. Different circumstances happen and somehow he gets influenced by the dualities of material nature. It's too cold or his car doesn't start and he doesn't want to... And somehow he doesn't go and meet the person. So then he goes to meet his Gurudev and his Gurudev says, so you went to meet the person? He says, oh Gurudev, I tried to meet him, but... And as soon as he says the word but, that's the flag, that's the dwaja, that's the hankar dwaja. When he says but, now the false ego will assert itself. Because now the disciple will give so many defenses, or the living entity, will offer so many defenses why they couldn't execute the service. But Gurudev, you don't understand. I my car didn't work, so then I wanted to go on a bus, but there was a bus strike, so I couldn't take the bus. And so, what could I do? I couldn't go. He was on the other side of town. I can't walk there. So, but. So we want to defend ourselves because basically, you know, I'm perfect, Gurudev. I could have done it. But, so this, we see this in the interaction of all living entities in this material world, besides devotees, they're always trying to lord it over each other. Because false ego, basic false ego means I am God. So in social intercourse between men and women, husbands and wives, the ego is always expressing itself in this conception of defense. Because we're defending our position. Because no one wants to admit, I made a mistake. I made a mistake, or I did something wrong. Because this will hurt our ego. Because our ego tells us, I'm perfect, I'm faultless. I never make mistakes. I'm very beautiful. I'm very handsome. I'm faultless. So this is the proof of the false ego. The more we're engaged in this defending principle, the more we're controlled by the false ego. So recognizing the existence of this entity, then we have to conquer this illusion or this falsity with the knowledge of real ego. Real ego is that I'm very, very tiny. I'm an insignificant spirit soul. I'm part and parcel of Krishna. And I can render some small little service. There's millions of me. There's millions of little living entities like me. In this room, there's billions and billions of devotees of Krishna. There's not 80 devotees in the Delhi temple. There's probably 5 trillion devotees in the Delhi temple. Some of them have very subtle, invisible bodies, microbes and... So many birds are there. Everyone, they're all rendering their service. The Mahabhagavat, he sees that every living entity is serving Krishna. He doesn't see any duality at all. But for preaching, the Madhyam, he has to see some duality. He has to see some differences. Some dwait. But like a Vaitacharya. Vaitacharya, he has no dwait, no duality. Of course, there's a story in this regard about a Vaitacharya seeing some duality. Mother Sachi, she made one offense she made because Lord Chaitanya was distributing love of Godhead. to all his followers. And then Shiva Pandit, he said, well, why don't you give it to Mother Sachi? Give her prema. And he said, no, I'll not give it to Mother Sachi. She's an offender. She's offended the devotees. And they said, how can you say that? Mother Sachi is the mother of the universe. She's Sachi Ma. She's your mother. She's the mother of all of us. She's blessing all of us and nourishing all of us with her affection for you and her affection for all of us. She's such a great devotee, Sachi Mata. You're Sachi Nandan. No, Mahabhu said, my mother, she's an offender. She's offended at Dvaitacharya. And so what is the offense? So then, of course, later Dvaitacharya was dancing in kirtan, in the blissful kirtan. And then at that time, Mother Sachi went and touched his feet, touched the dust from his feet, and took it on her head and begged forgiveness. And she was forgiven for her offense. So what was the offense of Mother Sachi? So her offense was that her elder son, Vishwarup, used to read Bhagavatam with Dvaitacharya and hear from him. And after hearing from Dvaitacharya, her son took sannyas and left home. So then she was a little bit disturbed by the loss of her son. So once she was joking with one of her friends in Mayapur, and she said, this Dvaitacharya, he is not Advait. He is Dvait. He sees duality. Advait means no duality. Advaita means no duality. He's Dvaita. He's not Advaita. Because he sees duality. He sees that my son, he's taken my son from me. So he sees that my son is not my son, but he should be take sannyas. So, you know, he's seeing some duality in this world. So he's not Advait. So Lord Chaitanya punished his mother for having that vision of seeing Dvaitacharya as guilty of this dualistic vision. So of course, it's a matter of vision. We have to cultivate the vision. There's the happiness and distress that we experience is only because of the false ego. And as soon as we change our identity, then we give up this happiness and distress. In the Bhikshu Gita, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Shukha Muni is explaining there's a whole discussion about happiness and distress, where the Brahmin, the sannyasi, he says, what is the cause of my happiness and distress? Is it my body, or is it these other people are causing me happiness and distress? And then he realizes that no, it's not my body, it's not my karma, it's just my illusion, my falsely identifying with these people as my enemies. I have no friends, I have no enemies. I actually am a pure spirit soul, I'm pure consciousness. And then the benediction is given there at the end of the Bhikshu Gita that anyone who is overwhelmed, if we are overwhelmed by the dualities of happiness and distress, sometimes our mind is giving us so much pain because of distress, then we should read this Bhikshu Gita. Like we have Bhagavad Gita, so many Gitas are there, Uddhava Gita. So this is called Bhikshu Gita, or the Aila Gita. The Song of the Brahmin, Avanti Brahmin. Chapter 34, 11th canto, chapter 34, Bhikshu. It's called Bhikshu. Bhikshu means beggar. It's the song of the beggar. What is his realization? And so he gives a benediction there. If you feel sometimes, oh, I'm so much overwhelmed and so much difficulty I'm feeling, and I can't, I don't know whether to turn right or left, I'm so much distressed, and you feel, or you're overwhelmed by the material happiness, and it disturbs your mind. Sometimes people get overwhelmed, they get happiness, and it disturbs their mind. For example, a devotee, and I remember one devotee, his mother died, and he inherited a lot of money about 10 years ago. And he was so happy, oh, I have all this money. I don't know what, he was really happy. He was Rung Brahmachari. He was very, very happy, but he became overwhelmed by that sense of happiness. Because he got all this money, then he thought, oh, I can buy all these things, I can do all these things. And he got a little overwhelmed and also a little bewildered. He didn't know how to properly deal with it. So then he wrote to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you should give this to the BBT. Give your inheritance to the BBT for publishing my books. And then when he did that, then he wasn't overwhelmed anymore by the false sense of happiness that money, that he was thinking I would get to different kinds of happiness. So this being overwhelmed by happiness and distress can be taken away by reading this. It's like medicine. This is the boon that's given. If you read this, you'll no longer be overwhelmed. That's the benediction, reading this. But as a practical response to this verse is we have to increase our knowledge of the self and also understand what is this ego. Actually think about it. Why are we feeling happy? Why are we feeling distress? It is all because of this identity. We're identifying with it. It's like today we identify this is my friend, then tomorrow we say, he's my enemy. Why? Because of manodharma, manovikara. It's a transformation of the mind. So the same thing, all of the happiness and distress that we experience is all in the mind. The soul is not feeling the happiness, he's experiencing it. The soul is experiencing the happiness and distress or pleasure and pain of the body because he's identifying with it. But the actual platform, all the so-called happiness, we squeeze some body or we eat something, we eat something nice, or we touch some bodies, or people have bodily enjoyment, or enjoy some eating, or sleeping, or any of these pleasures, are simply on the platform of false ego. It's nothing to do with the soul. Nothing at all to do with the soul. And it's nothing to do with the body. It's not bodily pleasure. Because if you take, when the soul leaves the body, you have a man's body and a woman's body. But if you put them together, you wrap the arm, you take the man and the woman, you stand them up. A dead man, dead body of a man and a dead body of a woman. Everything's there. All the brain, everything's there. And you wrap the arms, you wrap their arms around each other. And then you say, oh, what, are they feeling anything? No. They're not feeling anything. Is a man, that man's body feeling anything? Nothing. Is the woman feeling? No. Although they're wrapped around, alingita. Because what's the platform of feeling? The feelings are coming from the Atma, from the soul. And so there's really no pleasure, there's no pain in the material body at all. It's just matter, it's just some chemicals. This body is a bag of chemicals. But when the soul is there and then we identify with it, that's the false ego. And then we have to suffer or enjoy as a passenger in the chariot of the body. So all these difficulties that we have is because we fall from the platform of knowledge. We allow ourselves to be controlled by ignorance. I remember in the early days of ISKCON, practically there was two mantras in ISKCON. Always there's one mantra, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but the second mantra was Aham Brahmasmi. Not that we were Brahmavadis. Aham Brahmasmi, the first level of spiritual liberation means to realize I'm a spirit soul. And the second level is Krishnara Nityadas, that I'm Krishna, eternal servant of Krishna. And this is a real platform of pleasure, is to always serve Krishna. But in the beginning of ISKCON, at least in America, any temple you go into, they were always saying, all the devotees were reminding each other, hey, Prabhu, Aham Brahmasmi, you're not the body. You're not the body, you're spirit soul. And you're coughing, and you're freezing, and you have a cold, and you can't speak, and you're talking about, oh, my throat, and my back, my cold, this, that. Hey, stop it. Aham Brahmasmi. You're not the body. Stop talking about your throat, my back, my cold, my head, my pain, my... You're not the body. What is this stupidity? Stop it. Either talk about Krishna or chant Hare Krishna or just take some medicine and cure your disease. But what are you? Oh, my neck. Oh, my throat. Oh, all day long. Oh, it's so cold. I'm freezing. But I never heard in the last 12 years I'm in India, I never heard anybody say, hey, Prabhu, Aham Brahmasmi. Nobody says. So many of the old things that were there, I never hear anywhere. I asked also devotees in the West, they said, I never heard. No one ever says Aham Brahmasmi. It's like Aham Amiti. Aham Brahmasmi has been replaced by Aham Amiti. That's the new age. The Karmis have a phrase, it's the me generation. Me, me, me. Everything for me. It's my world. I'll do what I want. It's me, me, me. So that means Aham Amiti. Aham Amay, me. Aham Amay. Aham Amiti. Aham Amiti. I and mine. Everything is mine. So no one's saying, everyone's saying, it's, you know, no one's saying I'm Brahmasmi anymore. It's I and mine. It's my money. I collect some money for Krishna. Well, this is not Krishna's money. This is my money. Or at least, you know, half of it. I'll give half of it to Krishna. Half for Krishna, half for me. This is Hamameti. But I'm Brahmasmi is I'm Krishna's servant. This is Krishna's. Everything's his. I'm his. I belong to him. Mamata. He is mine. I am his. So, it doesn't matter what your position, this verse is telling us, it doesn't matter what your position, you can be liberated in any position. These were kings. They were Rajan. Hey Rajan, Griheshu. They were kings living in the Griha, not just the back, my cold, my head, my pain. My... You're not the body. What is this stupidity? Stupidity. They had the right identity. Aham Brahmasmi. Okay, I'm king. I have some external identity and some role to play, but I will play that role as a servant of Krishna. I will identify myself firstly and primarily as spirit soul. I have this body, okay, but what is this body? It's energy. This body is only energy. The whole world is nothing but a transformation of energy. Krishna's energy. I have this energy in my hand. And I'm Krishna's servant, so let me engage in his service. These very basic conceptions. So this is a monodharma. Monodharma. Of course, there is another conception of monodharma also. But monodharma means to, is religion in the mind also. So religion in the mind means to think, I am Krishna's servant. In the deity worship, to begin deity worship, one has to purify the elements of the body, which means you have to transcend the body, because you can't serve Krishna unless you identify yourself as Atman, because he's pure spiritual consciousness. So we must be at least temporarily for 45 minutes or an hour, whenever we're doing deity worship, archan or snan, takurji snan or puja, we must be identifying as a pure spirit soul and pure consciousness. So there's a principle, there's a practice. I mean, there's nyas and achman and all these things to purify the consciousness, but there's also something called bhuta, bhuta shuddhi. Bhuta shuddhi means the purification of the bhutas, panchabhuta, mahabhuta. It means the five great elements, or the elements of the body, must be purified. So what does that mean? That means we have to, because now we're contaminated, because we think I am the body. So when we go to do Krishna's service, if we go into the altar thinking I am a Brahmin, if we think I am a Brahmin, I'm a South Indian Brahmin, or I'm a UP Brahmin, I'm Panditji, or I'm this or that, or I'm a big sannyasi, or I'm big this, then that contaminates, that's a contamination. So we can't really serve Krishna. So we have to do Bhuta Shuddhi. So Bhuta Shuddhi means we chant the prayer given to us by Lord Chaitanya. Because that creates a way of thinking. And this prayer is supposed to be the actual, our mind is supposed to have this as its religion. The monodharma for the mind is this prayer. Because this prayer is, there's two levels of monodharma. The first level of monodharma, correct monodharma, is to think according to this prayer. Naham vipro na cha na apiti na bivaishu na shudra. Naham vani na cha griha patir no manashto yutirva. Kintu prodyanikala paramananda purnabritabdir. Gopi bhartu parakamoya das anodas anodas. I am Krishna's servant. So this one does achman and nyas and all kinds of purification of the body with mantras. Then he chants his prayer to purify the mind, because the mind is one of the bhutas. It's one of the elements, the eight elements. So the first level is Nityadas, I am Krishna's servant. But then, what is our Jivara Swarup? The Swarup of every Jiva is to serve Krishna. But the second meaning of Manodharma is when the Jiva realizes his Swarup, his own spiritual form, then in his mind he engages in religious activities. That's called Manodharma. And that's the third practice of devotion. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. Vishnu Smaranam. So then, that's also monodharma. When in the mind, one is identifying, yes, I am Krishna's servant, that's the first level. And we use our body and senses. But then as we become purified, then we may be, by Guru's grace, then we realize that we have an eternal spiritual form. Krishnaranityadas, Swarup. And then, in the mind, with that spiritual form, we do service in the mind. Mano Dharma. Dharma means engaging in the service of Krishna. In the mind, it means Mano Dharma. So that is also one of the practices of deity worship. Before the pujari is allowed to go on and do deity worship, he has to do all the worship in his mind first. It's called Manasi Seva. Otherwise, it's aparad. And not only does he do all the puja in his mind first, and then he goes on and does it externally, but he does more in his mind. Because Krishna, his nature is aniyor, aniyor, aniyor. Give me more, give me more, give me more. He wants more and more seva, more and more service. So we're offering panchupachara, or sodachara, upachara, whatever, 16 articles, 5 articles. But Krishna wants everything. Sarvadharman prataja. He wants everything we have. We offer 5 articles in puja, deepam, deep, and these things. So these are also, this is the positive practice of Manodharma. That we start thinking, I am Krishna's servant, aham brahmasmi. Hey Prabhu, aham brahmasmi, why are you lying down? Get up, do some service. Oh, I'm tired. Oh, so tired. Sleep tonight. Get up and do some service. Oh, Prabhu. Everyone is not, there's not this utsaha that there used to be in the early days. We're always taking shelter of the mind rather than taking shelter of service. Oh, you know, my this, that. So the first level is always to be thinking and seeing how everyone's part and parcel of Krishna. This is all Krishna's energy. There's no duality. It's all His. It's all Krishna's. And it's all meant for Krishna, for His service. And then start thinking, and then you chant this prayer. This prayer, every devotee, if there's one devotee that's initiated in this room and he doesn't know this prayer by heart, then that devotee's in maya. Naham vipro natra narapati vaishuna shudro. This prayer is like, this is like the one of the first things that we've learned, this prayer. Gopi bar, everyone knows this line, or they should know. Gopi bartu paragamalira dasana dasana das. But the first line means naham vipro. It annihilates all dualities. This prayer is so powerful that it annihilates all dualities and establishes us on the first level of our identity, that I'm Krishna's servant. And then further on, by attaining the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Guru and holy name, one will realize his sarup. Gopi bhakti palakalnir, dasana dasana das. But we don't even know, you know, naham vipro, this is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this prayer is there. In the deity worship book, it's there. This is one of the second malas for our neck. There's two malas. One mala for our neck is Triyanapi Sunichena. Right? That creates the basis by which bhakti can grow. Before bhakti can grow, you have to have a field. You have to have a field to grow a plant. Bhakti lata is a plant. And that field is humility. You know, khetra. Dainya khetra. The field of humility. Chinadapi sunichina turaiva sahishna. Armanina manidina kirtina sina. In your life, by realizing this prayer and chanting this prayer all the time and trying to act on the platform of this prayer, but still there's some dualities. So then you realize, you study this prayer and realize the meaning of this prayer. Naham vipro na chanarapati, that prayer by Lord Chaitanya. And then you can understand that. That then you can always exist on the platform that I'm Krishna's servant. But you serve Krishna on this plane of the material world, but we also serve Krishna in the eternal spiritual world. So these are some ideas to consider from this verse. We'll stop there. If there's any questions. Yeah, this is all the dynasty. Maybe you can read that tomorrow. It's all the different dynasties. All the verses before this are the different dynasty, and they have no purports. Aham Brahmasmi means I am. He says, I've read the translation, I am God, because it's a fact that Mayavadis or the Brahmavadis, they also say Aham Brahmasmi. We are God, but we're God-like. We're part. Our idea is, yes, aham brahmasmi, I am God, but I am godly and godlike. I am the same. I am God. I am a little God in quantity. I am Satchidananda. God is Satchidananda, but He is the supreme Satchidananda. I am Brahman, but He's Parabrahman. He is supreme Brahman. So aham brahmasmi is I am Brahman. It doesn't say aham Parabrahman. There is Brahman and Parabrahman. So the supreme Brahman is Krishna. We create a little tiny car. We have some creative power. Maybe combine some energy of Krishna's together and make an automobile or make a spaceship. But he can make millions of planets. And he makes the very energy. We maybe create something and think I'm God, but who gave us the energy? He's the source of all energy. He's the energetic, he's the source of everything. So even if we try to play the role of God, we want to create something, because that's one of the definitions of God, that He's the creator. So if I want to be God, I have to create something. What can I create? Everything's already existing. And I have to take things that are already existing that are created by someone else and recombine them in different ways and make a new creation or a new product. It's not a creation, it's simply a byproduct or a transmutation of matter. The matter is already there. The material is already there. So who created that? He must be supreme. So I can be a tiny creator or a tiny enjoyer, but I can't be the supreme creator, the supreme enjoyer. So there's a supreme Brahman. Aham Brahmas, I am Brahman, I am God, but there's a supreme God. Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is that we are one with God and different from God. We're one in quality, but different in quantity. We're very tiny. We're Anu, and He's Vibhu. He's great. We're very small. Anu means atomic. We're very tiny. Tiny particle of consciousness. Just like in the sunshine comes through your window. And if you have a screen there, a metal screen, metal screen, keep out the flies. And then the sun rays are divided into tiny little particles, little kiran, little rays are coming through. And if you look in those rays of sun, they're little particles of dust in your room that are dancing. They're dancing in the heat waves of that sunlight and that kiran. Little dust particles that are in the air. You can see them in the summer day. So that little tiny particle, that little dust particle, that's us. That's us. We are a tiny part, and that supreme sun of consciousness, that's Krishna. He is the supreme sun. And we are just one little tiny dust particle of consciousness floating in the rays of Krishna's consciousness, of Krishna's energy. But we have our form, we have a unique form, and we have our definition, but we're very tiny. Well, Krishna creates a situation for the devotees to put them in anxiety. We hear that the spiritual world is Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha. There's no anxiety there. But how come there's so much anxiety in my life? I'm a devotee, but I'm in so much anxiety. But I thought the Prabhupada said the temple was Vaikuntha. That's true. When I come in the temple, I don't feel any anxiety. It's peaceful. I chant and dance. I eat prasadam in the temple. I chant in the temple. All the things I do in the temple, they're anxiety-free. They make me feel happy. I hear some nice philosophy. I hear some bhajan. I chant kirtan. I see the beautiful forms of Parthasarathi, Radha Parthasarathi. But as soon as I leave the door of the temple, so much anxiety. Bahut chinta. Or whatever you call it, it's a big problem. So why? Because this is Krishna's mercy to give us this anxiety, to make us anxious. Because anxious also means eager. Anxiety also means eagerness, utsaha. There's a connection between utsaha and anxiety. So when we're in anxiety, we become eager to remember Krishna. And anxiety puts us in a situation where we remember Krishna. And we depend on Him. Because all we can do is fight and depend on Krishna for the result. Success is up to Krishna. We simply try. We may win, we may lose. And like Krishna told the coward boys when they went to beg for charity from the Yajnapatnis. First they went to the Yajnapatis, to the Brahmins, and they said, Tikne. They wouldn't even look at them. They didn't even respond to them. And they came back and Krishna preached to the boys. He said, well, sometimes begging is like that. Sometimes when you're begging, you're successful, and sometimes you're a failure. Anyway, don't worry. Go ahead and beg again. So they went back to the Yajnapatnis, and they begged from them. And the Yajnapatnis, as soon as they mentioned, they said, excuse me, we're friends of Krishna, and Krishna's nearby. As soon as they said when they said the name Krishna, because when they spoke, because they were in Sakyabhav, so when they chanted, they were chanting pure Nam, Shuddha Nam. So these Yajnapatnis, they had already had Purva Rag. They had already awakened. They already awakened their attachment for Krishna by hearing and chanting about him. Hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, although they never saw him or met him. Then when they heard the name, what happened was, when they heard Shuddha Nam from the lips of the Sakas, when they said, as soon as they said, well, Krishna's nearby, when they heard that Shuddha Nam, they had darshan of Krishna, and they exhibited asta saptik vikars. They started crying, their hair stood on end, they fell on the ground, they became devastated, practically all the eight symptoms existed simultaneously. And the coward boys were stunned, and they looked at each other, hey, what happened? All we did, we came up and said, you know, excuse me, Mataji, we're a little hungry, and our friend nearby, Krishna and Balaram, we said Krishna, and as soon as they heard the name, their hair stood on end, they started quivering and shaking, and they fell unconscious. And they said, what's with these ladies? First we asked their husbands if they'll give us some charity, and they wouldn't even look at us. And then we approached their wives, and at least they looked at us, but as soon as we said Krishna's name, they fainted. So then finally they came to, and then they grabbed everything in their houses and they ran to Krishna. Anyway, this is a little bit tangential. But the point is that sometimes we meet dualities in our course of our service. We're successful or a failure, but it's up to Krishna. So we just accepted, oh Krishna, this is a nice leela. Just like Prabhupada said, that the pure devotees, he said, those that are pure devotees, they find as much nectar from the Kurukshetra leela. It's not that they just bury their noses in the 10th canto, like Prabhupada was. One time he was criticizing the Sahajiyas. They only want to live in the 10th canto. Prabhupada says the Mahabhagavats, they relish as much rasa, as much taste from reading the Bhagavad Gita as they get from reading the Brahma Gita. there's the Bhagavad Gita, and there's the Brahma Gita, and the Veno Gita, and Pranaya Gita. So they develop the same taste, and they enjoy the same transcendental pleasure by reading Bhagavad Gita as they get from reading Brahma Gita, or Veno Gita, in 10th canto Bhagavatam. So, the devotee, he sees that, what I'm saying is that, in other words, the pastimes of Krishna, whether it's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or whether it's in the groves of Vrindavan with the gopis and Rasalila, it's all pleasurable, it's all Krishna's mercy. So we, as Krishna's devotees, we're also engaging in pastimes with Krishna. These are also pastimes. We're in Krishna's energy, and we're having activities. And we're trying to please him and serve him. So in this course of our pastimes, so that's why the devotee, he sees everything as Krishna's pastimes. So he's seeing, oh Krishna, this is very nice, Krishna. I'm trying to make these life members today, but you're making so many obstacles. Okay, Krishna, you're a very tricky fellow, but I'm not going to give up. I know you're trying to test me, you're trying to trick me. So we try to see, everything is Krishna's leela. Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that this is called Srishti leela. Krishna is known as Srishtikarta. Srishtikarta means the creator, the doer. But this is Srishti Leela, the creation. This is a Leela of Krishna, and we're in it. And in fact, he derives great pleasure in this Leela. The Leela that gives him the most pleasure is when Radha and Krishna come as Mahaprabhu to liberate all the jivas. So when we surrender to Lord Chaitanya, we give great pleasure to to Radha and Krishna. When the Nityabhata Jivas surrender to Krishna, or surrender to Lord Chaitanya and become devotees, they give so much pleasure to Radha and Krishna, because they come here to experience that pleasure of liberating the Jivas. And they experience that pleasure in the unified form of Lord Chaitanya. So we have to understand, hey, well, each devotee is engaging, actually he's increasing the pleasure of Radha and Krishna by engaging in this pastime here in this material world. And this is a favorable past. This is a favorable leela. This is a very favorable pastime, because this is pleasing Krishna, because we surrender to him and we're trying to please him by our activities. So therefore he's going to deal with us in a loving way. Sometimes he's going to embrace us and crush us by his embrace, and sometimes he's going to be very far away from us and throw so many obstacles and so many difficulties, and we'll say, Krishna, where are you? Krishna, where are you? I can't see you. What about me? I mean, because he wants to bring us to that platform of desperation. Desperation, the platform of desperation is the platform of Braja Bhav. That's the platform of Braja Bhakti. You're Braja Bhakti, no? So Braja Bhakti, you're Braja Bhakti Vilas. So this is your Vilas. Your Vilas is to be put in desperation. Because this material world is a plane of exploitation. And Vaikuntha is a plane of dedication. But Braja Gokul is a plane of desperation. You have to be desperate to get Krishna, Radha and Krishna. You have to be desperate. So you're trying to get Radha and Krishna's eternal service, Nitya Seva. You think you won't have any obstacles? You think you won't have any difficulties? Oh, I surrendered. Look, I Tilak Sika, it's all over now. Easy street. Haribol, Prabhu, Haribol, where's the Maha? No, it's difficult. Now the difficulty begins. But we must be enchanted by the destination. We must be captivated by the gati. Param gati. Param dam. Nitya dam. Braja dam. If this mind is captivated by the sadhya, the goal of going back to Godhead and eternally serving Krishna in a spiritual body in the groves of Vrindavan, when your mind becomes enlivened by that goal, that end, then you can overcome all obstacles. Just like a man, his wife sits in his mind. She sits there like a driver on a tractor or something. And so he undergoes so much hardship and difficulty and struggle and traveling all over the world and meeting people and making business and so much hardship. Why? Because he's always thinking, oh yes, my wife is there. This is for my wife. I'm doing this for my wife and children. And I'm also getting something. I get pleasure from my wife and children. So ultimately, I'm doing this for material pleasure. So we should have something sitting on our mind. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayor. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayor. Radha Krishna pad. The lotus feet of Radha and Krishna should be sitting on our mind. And the spiritual world should be sitting on our mind. And we're doing everything for them. And we're always thinking of them. And we're going and we're getting our pleasure from them. And we're offering everything to their lotus feet. And then there'll be no difficulty too hard. There'll be no obstacle too high to climb over. Just like the man, he does incredible things for his wife and family. He'll go through hell. He'll go through fire. Rain, sun, sleet, snow, it doesn't matter. He goes to work every day, driven by his wife and children. Because they're sitting in his mind. But with Radha and Krishna sit on our mind, or Krishna Balaram, Gornitai, whomever, and the spiritual world and that conception, it's captivated us, and the reality of the spiritual world. Do you know what the spiritual world is? What do people do there? What are the relationships? What are the experiences? That is we're supposed to know all these things, and it's supposed to live in our mind. And then we can go through anything for our beloved Ishtadev. It's like Hanuman, right? Hanuman, he opened his heart and said, see, look, Sita and Ram are in my heart. So if we lift open the top of any devotee's head, if we like open the top of his head and looked in there, we should see the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. If we do a brain scan on your head, we should see the form of Radha and Krishna. Because if you do a brain scan on the head of a man and you have the form of woman in your brain, if your mind is taking the shape, if your mind is being molded around the shape of a woman's form, then that's the body you'll get in your next life. Because your mind dictates your next body. Your mind takes shape around what you meditate on. So when you meditate on the form of Radha and Krishna, that's spiritual. So your mind takes a spiritual shape. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.